Welcome to the Work Science Center podcast, brought to you by the Work Science Center at the Georgia Institute of Technology. I'm your host for this episode, Keaton Fletcher. You can find more about our center on our website, www.worksciencecenter.gatech.edu. In today's podcast, I'm joined by Dr. Stephen Rogelberg, Chancellor's Professor and Professor of Management in the Belk College of Business at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. We discuss applying the principles of IO psychology to nonprofit organizations to better employee and volunteer lives. We also discuss his new book on meetings and other ways that IO psychologists can share our science with the people who will benefit most from it. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. Just to get started, how about you tell us a little bit about your background and how you started research, especially with volunteer work?
Sure. Well, so this is Stephen Rogelberg, and I'm Chancellor's Professor of Psychology, Management, Organizational Science at UNC Charlotte. So my research tends to be extremely eclectic, and I very much like doing very applied type of research. And that's pretty much what brought me to the volunteer space. Namely, I had done research looking at the impact of kind of extreme work responsibilities such as animal euthanasia in shelters and how that affects the stress and health and well-being of employees. And clearly it does. But what also emerged from that research is that healthy organizational practices were also critical. And one of those pieces that very much tied into an employee's experience of work was their interaction and connection with volunteers. And so that's really what kind of motivated me and got me excited to start looking at how we can make volunteer programs the best they can be. Not only will that be good for volunteers, that will be good for employees and good for the organization as a whole.
Basics-wise, what do we know about volunteer work? So why do people volunteer? Who volunteers? Things along those lines.
I mean, there's certainly a very robust literature on volunteerism. And I've been less involved in the research recently and more involved in the application of research. And I know we'll be talking about the volunteer program assessment. But, you know, I think there's a host of reasons that people volunteer, from, you know, wanting to, you know, obviously give back, to trying to create a new community for them to be part of, for fulfilling, you know, and then obviously fulfilling certain needs that they have, the fact that people in their environment, in their community volunteer, so kind of the norms around it. So there's lots of things that can drive someone to volunteer. And we know that, you know, meaningful volunteer experiences are a key predictor of life satisfaction. We also know that volunteer retention is tied to many of the same types of things that we know about employee retention, right? So when volunteers feel appreciated, when volunteers experience good communication, when volunteers are given voice, volunteers have meaningful work assignments. These are all things that tend to promote engagement and retention.
Yeah. So along those lines, what sorts of best practices are designed more for volunteers? How does that look different than it would be for paid employees to keep retention up?
That's the beauty of it. There's really not that much of a difference. The one big psychological factor is the obvious one, which is that volunteers can leave at any point, typically, without financial repercussions. So really, volunteers are more empowered to act on their attitudes around the volunteer assignment. So while employees might stay longer for necessity purposes, volunteers don't necessarily have that same type of connection. So in general, I would say that volunteer attitudes towards the program, towards the work, are even more predictive of retention than you see with employees.
That makes a lot of sense. So looking more at the applied work that you've done, first, would love to hear more about the Shelter Employee Engagement and Development System that you established in 2005. So could you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So I'm a really big believer in trying to put our science into practice. And so that particular system was designed for animal shelters in response to kind of animal euthanasia issues. So the research suggested that a really positive employee experience helps mitigate the negative effects of doing euthanasia. And we can't necessarily eliminate the problem of unwanted animals. But what we can do is create and help organizations create healthy practices so that they can promote, you know, just a terrific environment for employees to be having when they have to do such difficult tasks. And so the system, which we call SEEDS, is designed to help animal shelters gain insights into what is going well and not so well from an employee perspective, with the hope that these insights will better enable them to make positive changes to the work environment. And so we provide them with feedback. We provide them with this great report that has norms for the industry, because we've been doing this for over 20 years now. And then we also provide them with all kinds of potential actions to do better. And then many of these shelters reassess every year. So it's kind of bringing contemporary talent management practices around employee engagement into a sector that typically doesn't get to take advantage of them.
So are you limited to shelters in the Charlotte area, or is this?
No, for the SEEDS program, I mean, we work with shelters all around the country as well as in Canada. So yeah, it's been really well embraced by the animal welfare community, you know, for obvious reasons. And so yeah, it's been, I think, really, you know, very positively impactful, and it's helped kind of elevate the whole employee experience in shelters.
That's great. And so then I guess shifting perspectives, so rather than focusing on the employee, focusing more on the volunteers, could you tell us a little bit about the other program you helped create, so the volunteer program assessment?
Yeah, so this is another attempt to impact the greater system. Now, this isn't designed just for animal welfare organizations. This is designed for all nonprofits that have a volunteer program. And we title this program Helping Those Who Help Others. And so what our vision is that nonprofits' ability to positively enact their mission depends in good part to how effective their volunteer program is. So what we wanted to do was take what we know about volunteer retention and engagement, partner it with the types of interventions that you typically find in industrial organizational psychology, and create this outreach program where basically volunteers complete an assessment, then all the volunteer data are aggregated together, a report's created, there's a consult, feedback, norms, and basically the volunteer manager is able to get this terrific insight into what's working well about the volunteer program and what's working not so well. And the incredible thing is that we, as a collective, because this program has actually spread to 7 different universities, have helped well over 1,000 nonprofits, and it's all free, and it's just a super exciting application of IO psychology to volunteers.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate enough to be able to volunteer for this while I was in graduate school, and I personally was impacted, and then also being able to see the impact that you have on the volunteer programs. It's a really cool program. So I guess with these two more applied oriented, particularly with volunteer or nonprofits, you know, animal shelters, has that informed your perspective of IO as a field?
I think how it's informed my perspective of IO as a field is just how much good that we can do. And I think sometimes when you're part of a field, you can focus on, you know, what's missing and maybe the negatives, and forget, I think, all the good that we can do by making our science available to organizations. And so I have found this work to be very energizing, you know, because of that connection. In terms of how this affects my research, it really doesn't, because of the fact that when it comes to this particular space, I'm more interested in application. Most of my research these days is really in the meeting space and the team space.
So excited to ask you about that. You just published a book. Why? What inspired you to start researching meetings and teams?
So I like to do research on things that people find incredibly frustrating. And meetings definitely fit that bill.
definitely.
And I want to do this research in hopes that I might be able to figure out some potential mechanisms to not only better understand that experience, but also ways to make it better. Meetings are just such an ideal candidate in that with 55 million meetings a day in the U.S. alone, and the fact that meetings tend to be the most complained about work activity, there's clearly a tremendous opportunity here. And so that really drove me to be studying these things. And throughout this process, I was doing a host of talks on the topic. And then given all the science I was doing, given the talks, then I became motivated to write a book about it, The Surprising Science of Meetings. And the book released on January 2nd, and then January 3rd, Washington Post named it the number one leadership book to watch for 2019, which blew my mind. I had no idea this was coming. I had no idea that a book about meetings could engender this type of an excitement. And since then, the book has just been gaining, you know, lots of love in the market, and by the media. And it's just been a really fun ride to be able to talk about my science and the science of others. And I think it's a really nice story for our field in that I think it's just a good example of, how the marketplace, I think, really is interested in what we're doing. And it just comes down to, you know, I think our willingness to put it out there and obviously how we package it.
Absolutely. And that's actually something I wanted to pick your brain about is we are a very applied science, but I feel like a lot of us struggle with communicating our science and our results and our knowledge to people who aren't also IO psychologists. And so from your mass amount of both applied experience and also this book tour and being able to do all these talks, do you have some, you know, best practices or tips for maybe IO scientists, psychologists who struggle communicating their science?
Sure. I think first and foremost, look for opportunities to give talks. Right? The more you're talking to people who are not like you, the better your abilities get, your skills for translation get. And then two, you know, read HBR, read Harvard Business Review. So HBR is obviously one of the most read business periodicals. And they have a lot of folks talking about science in it. There's a lot of academics, not as many IO psychologists, but a lot of management scholars. I think there's a lot of really good examples. So I published my first HBR article this year, and it was an incredible growth experience. I really had to refine my skills and figure out how to kind of engage in this different way of writing. But since then, I have another one that I've published, and it's really fun. It's really fun to write things where you stay true to the science, and then they get read. The reach of periodicals like that is really pretty remarkable. So I really think that those two paths are great ways of kind of building your skills. And then it's just going for it. Submit something to HBR, submit something to MIT Sloan Management Review, and, you know, go through the process. Editors really will provide a lot of feedback that will allow you to just get better and better at it.
Great, great advice. Well, I want to be mindful of our time. So as we sort of wind down and wrap up, is there anything that we missed? Anything that you feel the field needs to hear about either volunteer work or the applied side or meetings?
No, I mean, your questions are great. I think the overall, you know, message is that I think, you know, that our field of organizational psychology really is in a special space and a space that I think we can feel really proud of. And I think that there's so many other fields that don't try to balance the science and practice like we do. And I encourage us to keep embracing that identity and keep embracing that there's that the tension between those two areas means that we're doing something right and not something wrong, that we're really trying to take on the vexing challenge of, you know, bringing science and practice together, and just to feel good about being in this profession. And, you know, and I commend you for, you know, doing this type of a podcast, because that's another effort to help kind of connect science and practice and general audiences together.
Thanks. And before we go, where can people find you? What sort of socials do you want to share? And then also Vipa and Seeds.
Yeah, so great way to kind of see what I'm doing, in particular around the book, is to go to StephenRogelberg.com. Easy enough. So StephenRogelberg.com. And then I also have my university website that, you know, just Google me, really easy to find. Vipa, just put in the vipa.uncc.edu. And it will pop up for you.
Easy enough. Well, thank you so much, Stephen, for your time, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Work Science Center podcast. To find more about the center, please navigate to our website at www.worksciencecenter.gatech.edu. To listen to more of our podcasts, either navigate to our website or subscribe to our podcast on any podcasting software like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. If you want to help the podcast, please like, comment, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends or employers or people that you think would benefit from it. Thank you.